It's time for Batter Up, the definitive Atlanta Braves podcast with hosts Joe Patrick and Caleb Johnson, giving you exclusive insight into our Braves from Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Here's Joe and Caleb.
Welcome into Batter Up on this Wednesday, June 8th. Caleb Johnson here with my co-host Joe Patrick. Joe, how's it going, man?
We're going to have a good vibes podcast, Caleb, for the first time in forever. This is amazing. Braves won six in a row. We have a really interesting Alex Anthopoulos interview that we're going to kind of discuss throughout the podcast that is kind of informing us that he did with Dukes and Bell earlier this week as well. Just a lot of good stuff to talk about. I finally feel optimistic about this team, probably for like the first time all season, really. I mean, it was kind of bad vibes from the get-go, except for the fact that you were still kind of celebrating the victories from last year and the championship from last year. Aside from that, though, the play on the field had never really been super encouraging, and this is finally the first time where it feels like things are starting to click in all areas of the team. The offense, the pitching, it's all kind of coming together finally. How are you feeling?
It's weird. It's one of those where if you had asked me Saturday, because I think I did I was talking with Nick Cale on Saturday, and he asked me what I thought about the team, and it was like, I mean, yay, they're finally actually winning some games. You know, I'm not making a big deal of it. However, where we are now, the fact that they're able to keep the streak going, but it's how they are winning games. It is what, you know, the small things that are going on about the fact that guys are hitting, the fact that you see a rotation fleshed out, you know, that I feel very comfortable with. You know, it's all the little things. And I'm even, strangely, and I don't want to jump ahead of some of the conversation I know we'll end up having, but I'm even seeing a team that just needs a little of this, little of that before making another run. Now, it's not going to be easy with obviously everything that's happening with the Mets right now, but it's just, I think it's a breath of you know, a breath of fresh air, a sigh of relief, whatever other, you know, corny phrase that I can use about this team, just because it's like, finally, you know, finally.
It looks like a team that's having fun for maybe the first time this year. It looks like a team that's confident, especially when you look at the way that these guys are performing at the plate. I think when you see a guy like Matt Olson start to break out this week, at least maybe not like he's been good all season in terms of like the hits have been there for him. The doubles rate has been kind of crazy all year, but he's just been really unlucky with none of these kinds of big hits coming with in many significant situations with runners on base. And he'd really struggled in those situations for him finally to get some big hits, some big 3-run homers, knock in some runs. I think that kind of gives guys, you know, good vibes throughout the lineup to see a big piece like him start to do that. I think we're starting to see a very similar thing with Ronald Acuna Jr., who hit two mammoth home runs yesterday on Tuesday, and that is, of course, following his series against the Rockies, where he ended that one with a homer, so he had actually homered in three straight at-bats. I think that also gets guys a little juice, and I think it just gets everybody, you know, not just the team, but, you know, the fans. Us clearly are in a better mood, so I think that it's just like there's a confidence shift of real vibe shift within the team that's really exciting. And again, it really needed to happen. We talked last week. We said we were kind of discouraged because it's not that it was like terrible. It's not like they were pulling an Angels or like losing a ton of games, but they just weren't really taking advantage of this kind of easier portion of the schedule that they were entering at that point. Now, I don't think they've lost a game since they've lost one game since we last spoke, but they really have turned on the after boosters, and it doesn't seem like it's going to stop, you know? It seems like this is a sustainable thing because of what you're getting in the pitching department.
Joe, for one, just to kind of do a correction, they literally haven't lost.
They haven't lost. Okay.
Since we last talked. That was, you know, they had won the first game on Wednesday, and since last week, all wins, which is just crazy. I was actually telling you, I was trying to remember before we started when Spencer Strider pitched this past week, and I've usually been able to look at the schedule and go, okay, well, I remember that was a loss and that was a win, and so that's how I kind of keep in my head of who pitched what night. Mm-hmm. And then when you look at the schedule, you're like, when, you're like, oh, okay, I can't remember, you know, who,
what like a crazy circumstance that was for the Braves on that Friday and Saturday where there was just like no run. You were going into extra innings with like no runs scored during those games. So while the pitching performances were kind of different because of the way that things played out in the game on Saturday, Strider started versus the dominant start that Max Fried had, it was just kind of funny the way that both those games played out, especially after the Braves had piled on for whatever it was like 13 runs in the first game of that Rockies series. So it was an interesting one. It always is up there in Coors. It's like you never know what to expect in a given game just because of all the obviously volatility that that stadium presents. But yeah, man, it's been good. It's really revitalized.
Yeah.
I was feeling pretty down about this team, if that wasn't kind of clear from having listened to this podcast.
Well, and I think that was my thing, is just a game or two into this Colorado series. I'll say, yeah, two games into this Colorado series, it was kind of like, this is another good sign. We've been here before where, you know, because I think that was Friday was when they had finally won three straight. And that was when it was like, okay, getting over the hump. Like it matters to get over the hump and to be able to win three straight where they hadn't been able to all season. Winning an extra innings game, that mattered. That counted for something.
Yep.
But I just wasn't willing to let my guard down just yet because we'd seen this team come back from those moments of thinking, finally, here it's all going to click. And then you had an issue here, issue there. You likely would have run into a situation where Ronald Acuna was injured again. And now we're not having that. And that's something I want to talk to you about, Joe, is just the fact of Ronald Acuna, as recent as last night, says he feels 100% healthy. Now, I obviously know he's a guy who he's probably going to say he's 100% even when he's, you know, 51%, just because if he feels the slightest bit healthy, he's going to play like he's 100%, and we love that about him. Mm-hmm. But he looks healthy, and I think that's been the difference, is we've caught moments in the past, especially these stints that he's had where he's not necessarily hitting the injured list, but we know everything's not right. That seems to be potentially in the past, and that's one of those, like, sky's the limit when that's the case.
Yeah, I think you could see it kind of just on his face, on his body language, that he's feeling a lot more confident that he is kind of his old self again. I mean, I was standing right in front of him when he was given that interview last night in Clubhouse when he said that. He was feeling 100%. What I actually got from that was maybe, he didn't say this specifically, it's very hard for him to express, you know, in a lot of nuance, like, you know, how he feels because of the translator and everything like that. But so I'm going to speculate a little bit here as to what he's thinking, what he's feeling. But I really feel like he's feeling 100% in terms of what he can deliver when he's in the batter's box. Like, he feels like he can hit the ball 470 feet, you know, again, like he proved on Tuesday. I think that he would admit that, you know, it takes more of a toll on him. He's still maybe, you know, building his body up to withstand the wear and tear of a very long baseball season. And obviously the Braves have said as much, that they are trying to protect him, and they have been doing that so far this season. But I think what he was really getting at was that he feels like he can finally be the full Ronald Acuna Jr. again when he's playing on the field, which is really exciting. And then the other thing that caught my ear last night after the game was Brian Snicker also talking, saying that, you know, they're like, I think he said, like, ready to let him loose or something like that. And that's really exciting to hear.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say, is, you know, you were talking about how Ronald was explaining things. And of course, you know, Franco's always going to try to clean it up the best that he can. You know, don't want to give us too much. but it felt unrestricted was the word that came to mind.
Yeah.
And I have to imagine when he's been dealing with the groin thing, when he's been dealing with, you know, just some of these little minor things that are flaring up for him, I have to wonder when he's standing in the box, if it's kind of like, all right, well, I don't want to go, you know, full power, or I don't want to go, you know, full hip thrust or twist, you know, whatever, you know, whether it's his legs, or, you know, just because I don't want to mess something up. And I, you know, I feel like that would hold him back, obviously, as a player. I remember somebody last week, and I tweeted it out, and I couldn't find the article. Somebody last week wrote an article, I can't remember if it was The Athletic or Bowman with MLB.com or who it was, about, you know, the concerns with Ronald Acuña Jr. losing his power as of late, and then it's like, yeah, then three home runs.
Yeah, right.
I think we're good. I think we're okay. You know,
and I mean, you look at it, he's OPSing 945, so he's like already like immediately back up to, you know, among the major league leaders, you know, right at the top of the game.
I was just about to say, sorry, speaking of OPS, did you happen to see Christian Pache's numbers?
No, I didn't.
It's in the 400s.
Oh, no.
It's one of those, like, I remember, because I mean, obviously, I haven't been following the Oakland A's. Like, I don't know what's really going on until they came to town and, you know, seeing Christian Pache. I had heard that he had had some pop early in the season. And so I was kind of like, oh, I hope, like, things are going well for him. And he's batting, like, 178 and, you know, with, like, a 460 or 480 OPS. And I was just like,
I'm glad you bring him up, Caleb, because it lets us kind of transition this conversation to Michael Harris, who,
yes,
to me is kind of in a similar situation as Pache was. I think that it's a little different. Pache obviously starting the season with the major league team last year, but both of these guys are, you know, highly touted prospects coming into play center field that this team hopes they can kind of hold down that position for years and years and kind of be a cornerstone. And I'm trying to figure it out in my own head why I feel differently about Michael Harris than I do about Christian Pache. Because if you were to have asked me, and I'm sure what I was saying when Christian Pache came up was that it doesn't really matter as much about how good or poor he is at the plate because of some of the things he gives you elsewhere. He's obviously got the great glove and the general speed and all that stuff. But maybe it's just because Michael Harris does actually seem like a tad bit faster, and the glove does seem to be even better than Christian Pache's, and he's giving you at least competitive at-bats, and he's putting the bat on the ball. It's not like he's tearing the cover off the ball or anything, but he's been decent. He's been, like, you know, he's hitting ninth, so it's not like you expect a ton. He's hitting 243. He's not at least striking out on a consistent basis. So I don't know, but I'm still not sure why I feel so much more confident in Michael Harris than I do Pache. Do you have any of these feelings?
I was just about to say, I can explain to you why, at least in my opinion, is that Michael Harris has hit at every other level. Like, it was not a thing where you knew, like, I mean, Christian Pache really wasn't hitting at any level that he played in. It was always one of those, like, man, if the bat can ever catch up to the glove, this guy's gonna be incredible.
And he had that big frame, so there was like you could say, like, oh well, he can project to be this kind of thing.
Sure. And it made sense. I mean, it's one of those, like, it still could happen.
I mean, he was a huge trade piece in that deal.
It's the sad part of the game is, you know, how things, the clock does get sped up on guys, and so it does cause kind of a make or break situation where if he doesn't work out in Oakland, then you run the risk of becoming a journeyman and bouncing around, that sort of thing. The thing with Michael Harris is that he's got pop. We've seen him have pop. It's not translating yet, but I didn't necessarily think, I wasn't expecting power when he stepped up to the major leagues.
Right.
I mean, he's facing the best pitching that he's ever seen in his entire life. And sure, at the beginning, those first couple of games, it was like, uh-oh, you know, is not good. Because
he definitely looked completely overmatched.
Yeah.
As to where, you know what, and that kind of brings me to something, again, that we referenced earlier, the interview that Alex Anthopoulos did with Dukes and Bell, which is him just saying that Michael Harris is, like, he's at least giving us competitive at-bats. You know, he's got 9 hits in 10 games. It's not, you know, earth-shattering, but it's not like it's nothing either.
Yeah.
So that helps.
Well, I was about to say, until, what, I think the last two games, like, he went a 4-game stretch where he had 7 hits. That's not bad, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I can deal with that. He was also driving in some runs. In that first game, I think it was, against Colorado. But it's just one of those, like, I expect the bat to catch up as he gets tired. The thing with Pache was he was touted for his defense, and then when him and Ender Inciarte were splitting time in center field, then Pache's defense started lacking, and I think his defense was lacking because he was mentally, you know, checked out or having issues because of the bat. And so
that's something I remember about Pache, was that the defense when he got to the major leagues did not even look particularly good. In fact, I remember him taking like very weird routes to pretty standard fly balls, so much different than the catch that Michael Harris makes last night. I mean, obviously he's already made a few like diving catches and spectacular grabs out in the outfield, but I think that one yesterday where he didn't even have to dive for it really kind of takes the cake from all of them, because he was shaded out into left field and makes a catch in right field at a full sprint that, you know, was just spectacular. Well, and Kyle Wright even said it was the best catch he's ever seen.
I was about to say, I don't know if you saw, obviously being in the game, you might not have caught this. Andrew Jones was in attendance. When you cause Andrew Jones to open his mouth and go, oh, you did a good thing. You did something impressive. And so it's one of those, to make that kind of play, to surprise Andrew Jones, to catch him, you know, kind of off guard. Yeah, the defense is definitely there. And that's, you know, when you got Max Fried coming to the podium on some like, that kid, you know, and Kyle Wright, to your point, you were saying Kyle Wright, when he's out there talking about, I don't have to worry about the outfield, you know, we're like, we know what this infield can do. I never have to worry about that. But, that's a massive change from where we were a week ago, 2 weeks ago, you know,
and something that Kyle Wright said specifically was that he said, it makes me a more confident pitcher knowing a guy like Michael Harris is out there able to gobble up those fly balls, which, I mean, that really does change the game for a pitcher. If that's true, if that makes you a better pitcher because you feel like it's okay to give up some of those harder hit balls, that really does change things, and it makes it worth it to have a guy like him out there despite the bat. But again, the bat's not even that big of an issue.
Yeah. Also, I want to reference something that Alex Anthopoulos talked about in that Dukes and Bell interview, where he was saying, like, the reason why we're doing what we're doing with Michael Harris, the reason why we're taking a chance on Spencer Strider start, like, they're going all out. Like, they are exhausting their options. This is not something that the Braves have necessarily been known for until last year.
And he said it's not something they wanted to do, ideally.
Yeah. And but that's fair. Like, I like that form of honesty. Where you go, you know, we didn't really want to, but I like that they weren't afraid to. You know,
he said if he can help us win games and we're in a winning mode, then we're going to do what it takes to win more ball games. And that's exactly, I think, what any Braves fan would want to hear.
Absolutely. It reminds me of, like, why do fans love Alex Anthopoulos outside of the crazy trade deadline last year? It's for stuff like this. It is the fact of Braves fans are so used to whining and complaining about, like, if they would just do thus and so, then they could start winning and they could win a World Series. And now you've seen the guy go, okay, yeah, we'll show you. And sometimes that's not always worked. You know, sometimes the throwing Kyle Muller, the throwing Tucker Davidson, in years past, I always forget Bryce's last name.
Bryce Wilson?
Wilson. Yeah, there we go. I like see his face pops up in my head. I'm always like, what is your name? so unforgettable, or so forgettable, I should say. But yeah, like he's been willing to make those moves in the past that are that are somewhat risky. You know, it could backfire. Mm-hmm. It pulls the tags off of new clothes is the, you know, thought that I've used in the past.
Yeah.
And so you know what you have. Are they good quality or not? And I think Michael Harris is in the long run going to be a great quality guy who is, I think his bat's going to catch up. It's just going to take a little bit.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I don't see him really losing his spot because of the kinds of things we've been seeing from him in the field over the course of the last week. So with that, let's presume that Michael Harris is going to be this team center fielder for the rest of the season on a day-to-day basis. And I'm curious to have this conversation about, like, how does this, or does it, kind of change the calculus of how you construct this batting order, or how you put together the day-to-day lineup? Because this outfield has really kind of been a consternation for Brian Snicker this year in terms of how do you fit in, you know, a William Contreras when you have Marcelo Ozuna out here, you know, in left field, like all this stuff. I feel like now that you have Michael Harris locked in as your center fielder, you've got Ronald Acuna. Sounds like, based on what we heard last night, that he is going to start playing right field more, that they're probably not going to DH him as much or start, you know. So now you've got Marcelo Ozuna out there probably as your standard left fielder, but is he able to move into a DH role like he was kind of initially planned? I just think that the addition of Michael Harris at least gives you a lot more flexibility in how Brian Snicker can construct a lineup. And I think that, you know, when you compare Ozuna and William Contreras, you know, if you're looking for who's going to be your DH on a given day, you know, maybe it gives you some opportunities to rest Marcelo Ozuna, where he's been having to play every single day. And I think it allows, you know, Adam Duvall, I think we're already starting to see some of the benefits of him just getting some time out of the lineup to just, you know, just get a rest, you know, and reset yourself a little bit. I think it'll be good for a lot of these guys.
Yeah, well, and that was, I mean, it was something that Adam Duvall literally could not do. You know, they couldn't afford to not have his glove out there. And now you've reached a point where, yeah, it feels like you only have one, you know, quote unquote weak spot or question mark as far as, because now we've reached a point. Ronald Acuna, hadn't he played like, is it 4 or 5 games consecutively in right field?
Yeah.
I mean, we're reaching a point where he's not much in question, which is so nice. Once again, you know,
I'm curious on a game like tonight where that outfield was very waterlogged when I left. There was a lot of rain. It's gonna be soft out there. I do wonder. Lineup's probably out. I don't know if he's in right field tonight, but I'll be curious if like field conditions and things like that could impact the Braves' decision. The other kind of guy, we don't have to talk too much in depth about him, but I was asking about him this morning on the morning show today, was Eddie Rosario. And, you know, he's starting to shag some balls and do some workouts and things coming back from his, like, macular hole or whatever it was.
Yeah.
It's still a ways off, but when he does return, I mean, the guy has essentially lost his spot. He was, like, a regular starter. That's not going to be the case when he returns. But then again, there's another kind of guy that figures into all this.
I was about to say, so Alex Anthopoulos, once again, mentioned Eddie Rosario in that Dukes and Bell interview, saying that he's among the guys they're going to revisit at the All-Star break. So that's when they're going to start looking at how things are progressing with Eddie Rosario.
He basically said he was like, we're going to give him the most amount of time.
Yes.
For the rehab.
Yeah, and that's why I'm putting very little stock into us seeing Eddie Rosario until much later in the season. And if we don't see him at all, wouldn't entirely surprise me, because it was Alex Anthopoulos, I think, did an interview with someone else before Dukes and Bell on Monday, when he said something about, like, the vision hasn't completely come back for Eddie Rosario yet. And that's one of those things that, like, you know, that'll make your, you know, antennas go up, you know, on some that's not good. And so obviously, absolutely wish him the best. He's been put on the 60-day injured list, which I'm pretty sure can be retroactive to a certain point. But like you were talking about, Alex Anthopoulos on Dukes and Bell said that position players can play 20 games on a rehab assignment, and it sounded like they would expect when they actually send him on a rehab assignment, he will play all 20 of those. And you know, and I think that was one of those, like, then they will revisit if they have to put him back on the injured list. It's just,
Either way, it's what they call champagne problems to have more players. So sure. The addition of Michael Harris makes everything easier, not harder, and it just gives Brian Singer more choices.
And one thing also I don't want to spend too much time on, but I do want to mention, because this is something that I feel like I need to say I was wrong about, that we're reaching a point. And that is the use of William Contreras. I was a guy who was like, you know, 2 weeks ago, you need to get his bat in the lineup however you can do it. He needs to be playing all the time. Da, 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 da.
Mm-hmm.
And then Steven, I'm trying to remember Steven's last name from over at Battery Power, wrote a great article about the fact of you've got to be a lot more careful with William Contreras now, because he is the backup catcher, or as Steven phrased it, he is the co-starter, especially with the number of games that Travis d'Arnaud has started taking off recently, which I don't think we're dealing with a, like, you know, Travis d'Arnaud needs to take the night off. So, like, I think he's really, you know, probably dealing with a little something nagging him a bit.
I mean, let's talk about this a little bit. Let's just make this a little bit of its own segment, because I do, you know, there is all this consternation, to your point, about William Contreras, and it's so funny to me, like, the catching position. I think that what Steven says is absolutely perfect, which is that it is a kind of their co-starters.
Yeah.
I don't know any team that's really relying on one catcher to kind of...
No.
Maybe there's a handful of them, like a JT Realmuto and some of the best ones, but, like, every team is using two catchers to some extent. Some are platooning more than others, but I think it's perfectly suitable for the Braves to have two guys like Contreras and d'Arnaud who you can rotate in and out and get, you know, give them relatively split time, 50-50. Now, once you get to like a postseason, you might rely on Travis d'Arnaud a little more just because of his repertoire with the pitching staff and his, you know, defensive ability and things like that. But no, I totally agree that, you know, these guys should split time. And, you know, we were kind of laughing together because our colleague John Chuckery at night had a rant about this, saying how Contreras need to be like the starter. You know, is basically saying exactly what I was saying, that the way we should not be thinking about this position, which is that you really need two guys. And so the Braves should just be very, very fortunate that there are two guys here that are producing basically better than any other team in baseball has going at the catcher position.
Yeah, and I was about to say, that was the night that Travis d'Arnaud
went off for two homers and a grand slam.
Just
bad luck, Chuck.
Just a little bit.
Bad timing. Happens to us all on radio.
Yeah, so what he's dealing with, it's the forearm that's bothering him right now, Travis d'Arnaud, that's kept him out of the lineup for a little bit. The reason why I brought up William Contreras' use is because, you know, that article from Battery Power, I want to give them their credit because they're absolutely spot on in pointing out the fact of, like, yeah, you might not want to play him every day. As much as you want that bat in the lineup, you don't want to wear this guy out because he is playing one of the most difficult and, like, physically demanding positions in baseball in catching. And so it won't be as big of a deal if we now reach but this has all changed in just a couple of weeks, because, like, I mean, you know, you lose Manny Pena for sure, and then you have to start thinking like this, where you know, where William Contreras was looked at as like, throw him out in left field, let's figure something out. It's like, no, he is the backup catcher now.
Steven Tolbert, by the way, just to clarify.
Steven Tolbert, thank you. Did a great job.
B_outliers.
Did a great job writing about, you know, just the fact that you got to be more careful, because if you run into a spot where Contreras gets injured, now you're looking at like you were last season, where you're calling up some guys, you know, I mean, I love Stephen Vogt, and you know he deserves his ring. He got his ring yesterday. That's great, along with Christian Pache. But the fact that Stephen Vogt was really relied upon to catch some really important games, and I realize some of it was, you know, COVID related and that sort of thing. But you know, there were some ugly names at the Braves. Yeah. You know, Jeff Mathis.
Guys, they went through that, like seven catchers last year or something like that. Crazy.
The guys that the Braves were putting behind the plate. You know, yeah, but that's the thing.
Jeff Mathis is a nice, like, coach at this point in his career. Yeah. But he's not
a guy that you want to have to call on because you're dealing with injuries or that sort of thing. So that is, it's one of the, I just want to say that because I know I had been on here talking about, like, we need to get Contreras in the lineup as much as possible, and I thought at that moment it was true, but we've now reached a different point, and so it does need to be clarified that, you know, things change. As much as Spencer Strider is now a part of this rotation, that is for sure. Like, that is set in stone. Alex Anthopoulos talked about it on Dukes and Bell once again, saying that, you know, Strider is a guy that he has so much talent that they were putting him in the best position for him to help the team at that time. And because that fifth rotation spot became a revolving door, unfortunately, Bryce Elder, Tucker Davidson, Kyle Muller, no one could take over the spot. Waskar Ainoa, which feels like a forgotten name at this point.
Yeah, wow. It's nice to have a guy like Ainoa in your back pocket there, you know, just like working. And he had a great start last night, by the way. Through seven innings, no hits, three walks. Yeah.
Well, maybe a guy that, you know, gets some time, not in the fifth rotation spot, because that was the thing that Alex Anthopoulos drilled in, is he was like, no, this is a guy who we think is a starter. He has started at every level, and it seems like this is his place to stay, because as much as he has shown some rookie moments, overall, the stuff's been really good, and he seems to have locked that spot down.
So I definitely understand where Alex Anthopoulos is coming from here, and I believe him. Like, I do think that, you know, Spencer Strider, I think he's going to be in this starting rotation here for the next couple months at least. But I do think that, you know, there is the opportunity for things to change down the line. And what I just continue to think about is Mike Soroka, the reintroduction of Mike Soroka. I don't know. It'll be very interesting to see how things are going at that point in the season when he does seem ready to return to this team. I'm curious as to whether they might use Soroka in a bullpen role, because, you know, you could use him in kind of a similar spot in the way that you use Spencer Strider, where you could use him in some spots where he's, you know, going multiple innings. You're not going to have to worry about him hitting, so there's nothing like that to fear. Or do you move Strider back into that role because he's more familiar with it? He's already done it this year, and, you know, Soroka is more comfortable as a starter. I don't know, but I do think that that's going to be something that, you know, the Braves are going to have to contend with. And again, speaking of champagne problems, I mean, this is just great when you're adding another proven pitcher. Obviously, we have to temper our expectations for Soroka, but it's going to be very interesting to see how they handle that situation.
If I had to speculate about how they would go about treating Mike Soroka, I would think, if healthy, that he enters in a bullpen role because it's less taxing, you know, being used rarely, I would say, more than your standard, you know, Colin McHugh before he hit the injured list, Kenley Jansen, those sorts of guys. And then I would wonder about late in the season. Because we're getting to a point, like, it's going to be late in the year before we actually see him. I think, you know, August, September sort of scenarios. That's a point where you could actually go to a six-man and then get some guys some extra rest as you head into the playoffs. That's how I would be interested to see if they go about using Soroka, just for the fact of, that late in the season to introduce him like that, you got to do it so carefully. So going bullpen and then six man, I don't know. I mean, unless, you know, something catastrophic just happens to somebody else, then you're right. It is champagne problems where you're having to figure it out and maybe giving some guys some extra rest.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, one of the things also that to think about is that sometimes if a guy's coming out of the bullpen, it may be a little bit easier to manage his innings, and so maybe that is another reason why they could use Soroka in that role, is because you can just manage him a little bit better. You know, maybe there's, like, you want to keep him down a few extra days or something, and so you don't then have your rotation kind of scrambling, so... there are definitely some reasons to have caution with Mike Soroka. First of all, I mean, we don't know exactly how good he's going to be. We all hope that he's the same guy eventually that he was, but when he first comes back, you just don't know exactly what you're going to be getting. So, yeah, I don't know. It will be interesting. I do think, I just keep thinking about this rotation, especially after a night like last night where we saw Kyle Wright give up a couple runs in the first inning and then end up pitching 8 innings in a freaking gem. I think he only allowed like 2 base runners after the first inning last night. I mean, this has got to be, just because of, mainly because of the way that he's performed this year, it's got to be one of the better possible outcomes for this Braves rotation, the way that it's kind of sorted itself out, even despite the fact that, you know, Waskar Yanoa wasn't the guy that you hoped he would be and things like that. But just to have, obviously, the ace that you have in Max Fried, you have a pretty consistent, young, improving pitcher in Ian Anderson. You've got, obviously, what I've just described with Kyle Wright. And, like, Charlie Morton is kind of, like, the guy who's, like, your most volatile pitcher right now. You're kind of your biggest unknown. Who's a veteran pitcher and knows exactly what he's doing out there. It's a very good situation for this team.
Yeah, he's like throwing 40 pitches in the first inning and still going 5.
That's
like,
amazing. Yeah,
yeah, that's one of those could be a lot worse. You know.
Yeah, and I think that it's one of the reasons why this team, there's a lot of hope that they can maintain, not, you know, obviously they're not going to win games at the rate that they're currently winning them forever, but you can have a very consistent stretch, long stretch of the season when you get consistent performances like this out of your starting rotation. They're the ones who can really kind of set that baseline for you, and, you know, the offense, you know, only needs a goal to, you know, score X amount of runs per game, and then you're going to win the vast majority of those games. So it's a good situation.
Yeah, it's also building into a situation where we're getting to a point that I'm not totally convinced that any real significant moves are going to get made to this team at the trade deadline. You know, it's something that gets a lot of attention because of last year, but this team is clicking at a point that I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, I'm not saying no moves are going to be done, because I still think, you know, you and I had talked about the fact of, you've got the Kyle Muller, you got Tucker Davidson, you've got Bryce Elder, you got young guys that probably aren't going to be a part of this future, and so they've got value. But as far as any like major moves, I don't know that's going to happen. Like, we maybe were thinking 2 weeks ago,
couple weeks ago, what we were talking about outfielders. You know, are you going to be able to trade for an outfielder or something? And with Michael Harris, I think that you've kind of solved that situation pretty well, to the point where you wouldn't want to go out and make a trade like that. I agree with you. I mean, I think that, to your point, I think that it's not you're not saying that the Braves won't make any deals.
No.
I think that they're very likely to bolster the bullpen, you know, because of what's happened with Tyler Matzek. You know, you've had to rotate through some bodies there, and that's the perfect opportunity to do something like you did in 2019, where the team trades a few pitching prospects and picks up some veteran bullpen arms. Like, that year they got Shane Green, Mark Melanson, those types. I don't know how much payroll they're going to be able to add. From what I understand, they have some payroll. They always kind of plan to be able to add a little bit midseason, and I certainly expect them to do something like that. But I agree with you. I don't expect them to really kind of shake up the core of this team at all, especially if they are able to continue the momentum that they've built over the last week and start to get themselves into, you know, stronger and stronger contention to make the playoffs. By the way, to that point, I was looking at Baseball Reference. Like, 2 weeks ago, they were like 70% to make playoff odds. And then last week, I remember we pointed this out and talked about it a little bit, they had dropped down to like 56%.
Yep.
And now they're back up to like 72. So things are trending well.
Well, I mean, it's still going to be difficult, because that's one of the things I wanted to talk about as we kind of wrap this up, is the fact of the Braves have won 6 straight. And then you go check the National League East standings and you're like, God, they're
freaking Mets, man.
8 games behind the Mets. Yeah, this is what we were saying.
They picked up a couple games in like the last 2 games.
Exactly. But that was, you know, that's what, like, we knew this was going to be a problem. we said this was going to be a problem. The Braves were going to have to put some winning streaks like this together to get back into the conversation. I was one who went on Nick Cale and said, I think for the Braves to make any significant moves, they would need to be about 5 games behind the Mets. Well, in just this short amount of time, I feel like, not to like swing too far the other way, but just based on, you know, kind of the conversation we were just having, it's like, yeah, I don't know that there's anything that big that needs to be made, but they still need to close ground, because I do not like having to compete for a wild card position, especially every time I look at that National League West. I'm just like, it scares me.
To give credit once again to Battery Power, great guys over there, by the way.
We are
friends of everybody over there, the Battery Power crew. Scott Coleman was talking about how, you know, this situation that the Braves are in right now with a very winnable schedule, the Mets have a much more difficult schedule during this same exact period. So, this is kind of a time for the Braves to hopefully be able to make up some ground and eat into this lead that they've built up a little bit. Helps by the fact that, you know, Pete Alonso got knocked out of the game last night, got hit by on the hand. Starling Marte also left that game injured. So a couple big pieces lost for the Mets. I don't know how long those guys are going to be out for. Yeah. I haven't checked the wire to see if they've been diagnosed with anything. But this is an opportunity. And even regardless of the Mets, I mean, you want to win the division, no doubt, obviously. But, you know, when you just look at the standings right now, the wild card is looking a lot better than it did, a couple weeks ago, where you were, you know, a handful of games out behind some of these teams in the wild card spots. You're right there in the mix now.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's just I'm always one of like, yeah, don't want to have to worry about.
It gets really hairy when you're in the wild card race in, you know, down the stretch of the season, especially with two slots and you got, you know, competitive teams. Yeah, that's not fun. It's scary.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. I mean, when you've got three teams in the National League West who are fighting for the playoffs, and you typically have a better record than the Braves do, I think all three of those teams, in the National League West do right now. Mm-hmm. And then two in the National League Central. It's just one of those, like, yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, as much as Spencer Strider is now a part of this rotation, that is for sure. Like, that is set in stone. Alex Anthopoulos talked about it on Dukes and Bell once again, saying that, you know, Strider is a guy that he has so much talent that they were putting him in the best position for him to help the team at that time. And because that fifth rotation spot became a revolving door, unfortunately, Bryce Elder, Tucker Davidson, Kyle Muller, no one could take over the spot. Waskar Ainoa, which feels like a forgotten name at this point.
Yeah, wow. It's nice to have a guy like Ainoa in your back pocket there, you know, like working. And he had a great start last night, by the way, through 7 innings, no hits, 3 walks. Yeah.
Well, maybe a guy that, you know, get some time, not in the fifth rotation spot, because that was the thing that Alex Anthopoulos drilled in, is he was like, no, this is a guy who we think is a starter. He has started at every level, and it seems like this is his place to stay, because as much as he has shown some rookie moments, overall, the stuff's been really good, and he seems to have locked that spot down.
So I definitely understand where Alex Anthopoulos is coming from here, and I believe him. Like, I do think that, you know, Spencer Strider, I think he's going to be in this starting rotation here for the next couple months at least. But I do think that, you know, there is the opportunity for things to change down the line. And what I just continue to think about is Mike Soroka, the reintroduction of Mike Soroka. I don't know. Like, I don't know. It'll be very interesting to see how things are going at that point in the season when he does seem ready to return to this team. I'm curious as to whether they might use Soroka in a bullpen role, because, you know, you could use him in kind of a similar spot in the way that you use Spencer Strider, where you could use him in some spots where he's, you know, going multiple innings. You're not going to have to worry about him hitting, so there's nothing like that to fear. Or do you move Strider back into that role because he's more familiar with it? He's already done it this year, and, you know, Soroka is more comfortable as a starter. I don't know, but I do think that that's going to be something that, you know, the Braves are going to have to contend with. And again, speaking of champagne problems, I mean, yeah, this is just great when you're adding another proven pitcher. Obviously, we have to temper our expectations for Soroka, but it's going to be very interesting to see how they handle that situation.
If I had to speculate about how they would go about treating Mike Soroka, I would think, if healthy, that he enters in a bullpen role because it's less taxing, you know, being used rarely, I would say, more than your standard, Colin McHugh before he hit the injured list, Kenley Jansen, those sorts of guys. And then I would wonder about late in the season, because we're getting to a point, like, it's going to be late in the year before we actually see him. I think, August, September, mm-hmm, sort of scenarios. That's a point where you could actually go to a six-man and then get some guys some extra rest as you head into the playoffs. That's how I would be interested to see if they go about using Soroka, just for the fact of that late in the season to introduce him like that. You got to do it so carefully. Mm-hmm. So going bullpen and then six-man, I don't know. I mean, unless, you know, something catastrophic just happens to somebody else, then you're right. It is champagne problems where you're having to figure it out and maybe giving some guys some extra rest.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, one of the things also that to think about is that sometimes if a guy's coming out of the bullpen, it may be a little bit easier to manage his innings. And so maybe that is another reason why they could use Soroka in that role, is because you can just manage him a little bit better. You know, maybe there's, like, you want to keep him down a few extra days or something, and so you don't then have your rotation kind of scrambling. So there are definitely some reasons to have caution with Mike Soroka. First of all, I mean, we don't know exactly how good he's going to be. We all hope that he's the same guy eventually that he was, but when he first comes back, you just don't know exactly what you're going to be getting. So yeah, I don't know. It will be interesting. I do think, I just keep thinking about this rotation, especially after a night like last night where we saw Kyle Wright give up a couple runs in the first inning and then end up pitching eight innings in a freaking gem. He only allowed like two base runners after the first inning last night. I mean, this has got to be, just because of, mainly because of the way that he's performed this year, it's got to be one of the better possible outcomes for this Braves rotation, the way that it's kind of sorted itself out, even despite the fact that, you know, Waskar Yanoa wasn't the guy that you hoped he would be and things like that. But just to have, obviously, the ace that you have in Max Fried, you have a pretty consistent, young, improving pitcher in Ian Anderson. You've got, obviously, what I've just described with Kyle Wright. And, like, Charlie Morton is kind of, like, the guy who's, like, your most volatile pitcher right now. You're kind of your biggest unknown. Who's a veteran pitcher and knows exactly what he's doing out there. It's a very good situation for this team.
Yeah, he's like throwing 40 pitches in the first inning and still going five.
That's
like,
amazing. Yeah,
yeah. That's one of those could be a lot worse. You know.
Yeah, and I think that it's one of the reasons why this team, there's a lot of hope that they can maintain, not, you know, obviously they're not going to win games at the rate that they're currently winning them forever, but you can have a very consistent stretch, long stretch of the season when you get consistent performances like this out of your starting rotation. They're the ones who can really kind of set that baseline for you, and, you know, the offense, you know, only needs a goal to, you know, score X amount of runs per game, and then you're going to win the vast majority of those games. So it's a good situation.
Yeah, it's also building into a situation where we're getting to a point that I'm not totally convinced that any real significant moves are going to get made to this team at the trade deadline. You know, it's something that gets a lot of attention because of last year, but this team is clicking at a point that I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, I'm not saying no moves are going to be done, because I still think, you know, you and I had talked about the fact of, you've got the Kyle Muller, you got Tucker Davidson, you've got Bryce Elder, you got young guys that probably aren't going to be a part of this future, and so they've got value. But as far as any like major moves, I don't know if it's going to happen like we maybe were thinking 2 weeks ago.
Right, a couple weeks ago, what we were talking about outfielders, you know, are you going to be able to trade for an outfielder or something? And with Michael Harris, I think that you've kind of solved that situation pretty well to the point where you wouldn't want to go out and make a trade like that. I agree with you. I mean, I think that, to your point, I think that it's not you're not saying that the Braves won't make any deals.
No.
I think that they're very likely to bolster the bullpen, you know, because of what's happened with Tyler Matzek. You know, you've had to rotate through some bodies there, and that's the perfect opportunity to do something like you did in 2019, where the team trades a few pitching prospects and picks up some veteran bullpen arms. Like that year, they got Shane Green, Mark Melanson, those types. I don't know how much payroll they're going to be able to add. From what I understand, they have some payroll. They always kind of plan to be able to add a little bit midseason, and I certainly expect them to do something like that. But I agree with you. I don't expect them to really kind of shake up the core of this team at all, especially if they are able to continue the momentum that they've built over the last week and start to get themselves into, you know, stronger and stronger contention to make the playoffs. By the way, to that point, I was looking at Baseball Reference. Like 2 weeks ago, they were like 70% to make playoff odds. And then last week, I remember we pointed this out and talked about it a little bit, they had dropped down to like 56%.
Yep.
And now they're back up to like 72. So things are trending well.
Well, I mean, it's still going to be difficult, because that's one of the things I wanted to talk about as we kind of wrap this up, is the fact of the Braves have won six straight. And then you go check the National League East standings and you're like, God, they're freaking
Mets,
games,
man.
Eight games behind the Mets. Yeah, this is what we were saying.
They picked up a couple games in like the last two games.
Exactly. But that was, you know, that's what, like, we knew this was going to be a problem. We said this was going to be a problem. The Braves were going to have to put some winning streaks like this together to get back into the conversation. I was one who went on Nick Cale and said, I think for the Braves to make any significant moves, they would need to be about five games behind the Mets. Well, in just this short amount of time, you know, I feel like, not to like swing too far the other way, but just based on, you know, kind of the conversation we were just having, it's like, yeah, I don't know that there's anything that big that needs to be made, but they still need to close ground, because I do not like having to compete for a wild card position. Especially every time I look at that National League West, I'm just like, it scares me.
To give credit once again to Battery Power, great guys over there, by the way.
We are
friends of everybody over there, the Battery Power crew. Scott Coleman was talking about how, you know, this situation that the Braves are in right now with a very winnable schedule, the Mets have a much more difficult schedule during the same exact period. So, this is kind of a time for the Braves to hopefully be able to make up some ground and, you know, eat into this lead that they've built up a little bit. Helps by the fact that, you know, Pete Alonso got knocked out of the game last night, got hit by on the hand. Starling Marte also left that game injured. So a couple big pieces lost for the Mets. I don't know how long those guys are going to be out for.
Yeah.
I haven't checked the wire to see if they've been diagnosed with anything. But this is an opportunity. And even regardless of the Mets, I mean, you want to win the division, no doubt, obviously. But, you know, when you just look at the standings right now, the wild card is looking a lot better than it did, a couple weeks ago, where you were, you know, a handful of games out behind some of these teams in the wild card spots. You're right there in the mix now.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's just I'm always one of like, yeah, don't want to have to worry about.
It gets really hairy when you're in the wild card race in, you know, down the stretch of the season, especially with two slots and you got, you know, competitive teams. Yeah, that's not fun. It's scary.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. I mean, when you've got three teams in the National League West who are fighting for the playoffs, and you know, typically have a better record than the Braves do, I think all three of those teams, in the National League West do right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then two in the National League Central. It's just one of those, like, yeah, it makes me a little uncomfy, and let's just win the division so we don't have to worry about it.
I agree.
But once again, like the Braves are on a series of games.
On a heater.
Yeah, finish out with Oakland tonight, and then four against the Pittsburgh Pirates. Another potential sweep opportunity. You know, wouldn't that be incredible to just go on a crazy long, what you just had, the Angels fire a manager over losing 12. How about the Braves win 12? You know, that would be a fun one. And then I feel like we're having more positive conversations instead of the doom and gloom that I feel like we've been bringing the last.
Well, I feel like the doom and gloom has really motivated the team to start playing better.
No. Absolutely. There we go. Yeah.
Just in my own mind.
You know, like that's going to be my coaching style as a parent is the, like, you know, you suck. Come on. You know, like, yeah, you know, that's not the come on, you could do it. You know, just
it's going to be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. We want the best. I'm kidding. But, anything else you want to add, Joe, before we get out of here?
No, I think we've covered mostly everything, all the good stuff. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening in. We'll be back next week for another episode where hopefully we're still dealing with a Braves winning streak. For my partner, Joe Patrick, I'm Caleb Johnson. Have a good one.